Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
Context and Clarity has been called a community-based pro-practice masterclass for architects. It's awfully high praise, but since we began this journey back in April of 2020, we've certainly grown into a community of small firm architects, all focused on what matters most to their success. And by the way, it doesn't matter if you're the employee of a firm that's dreaming of going out on your own, or you've owned your own firm for 26 years. There's something here for everyone, and that's where you come in. Thanks for listening, and welcome to the Context and Clarity podcast. Every week, we have a conversation with an expert or a thought leader on things that matter most to the success of architects just like you. Then we go backstage with someone from our community, and we talk about what we learned, what our biggest takeaways were, and how we're going to apply what we heard to our own businesses. In this episode, we talked with Brad Levitt. Brad's the founder and the president of AFT Construction in Scottsdale, Arizona, and he's the host of the AFT Construction podcast. That's AFT, as in A Finer Touch. Brad and I first connected on Clubhouse. A group of dedicated contractors asked me to speak in a couple of their rooms on that app, and I had a great time with a bunch of professionals from across the country who just want to get better at what they do. As I got to know Brad better, I realized that his mission, besides building great, beautiful projects, is helping other contractors build better businesses. His mission is a lot like the purpose behind the Entree Architect Academy. When I realized that we'd never talked about the architect-contractor relationship on Context and Clarity before, Brad was the first and the only person that I thought of. So luckily, this is a topic that he really loves. Now, I'll be honest. Several of the things that Brad talked about in our conversation surprised me. There was at least one epiphany for me, so I hope you'll get as much out of this conversation as I did. Catherine McPhail was back to join me for the conversation with Brad Levitt, and again backstage afterward. Catherine is my co-host, and she's an architect and podcaster from Arlington, Massachusetts. In addition to Context and Clarity, Catherine hosts Talking Home Renovations with the House Maven, and she's the CEO of Demios Architects. As always, I'm looking forward to talking about our takeaways from the conversation. So let's go backstage and listen in as Catherine and I talk about our conversation with Brad Levitt from AFT Construction in Scottsdale, Arizona. What surprised you about the conversation? Anything?
Well, I guess the thing, just that he actually sees social media as a way to connect, which I guess seems obvious, but I thought I was being kind of clever and crafty, stalking certain contractors and then commenting on their stuff and then trying to build relationships. But it turns out everybody's doing it, I guess. So that's basically, and the fact, what kind of surprised me is at the end when he was saying that the people who aren't on social media aren't as like reliable or concerned about their reputation and brand, maybe as people, the people who aren't on social media, maybe they could be suspicious or they could be sketchy. The people who are on social media are probably not sketchy, was the message I got.
Yes. And that's, that was one of the things that surprised me.
And as somebody that has spent years now consulting on marketing, and it, you know, I had essentially built a social media agency for a number of years. It felt kind of bad to be surprised by that. But when he was talking about, as you said, the fact that, you know, he's talking about contractors, they're building this presence, they're building this brand on social media. And those are the people that are going to be reliable. Those are the people that are interested in building and upholding their reputation. It makes total sense.
It does make total sense. When I think about all the subs that I work with, the ones who I like to work with the most, I follow them on social media, and they do care about their brand, and they care about, you know, doing what they say they're going to do. And yeah, to look at my Instagram in a different light now.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you flip that around, of course, for architects, but it's, you know, it's a very similar conversation. And it, you know, Brad said, you can think that you don't have time for this and so on and so forth, but when you're putting things on social media, people see it. That's the point. But it's like you're creating good work. And I don't, maybe this is a chicken and egg thing, but you're creating good work so that you can put it on social media. You're putting things on social media because you created good work. And somebody mentioned, I think it was James Petty mentioned during our conversation with Brad, that Brad is one of the most well-spoken contractors he's ever met. I think you get a feel for the level of professionalism at AFT Construction, you know, just talking, looking at Brad and talking to Brad. I mean, this is, you know, he's not a guy working out of his pickup truck, the old stereotype.
Right. But then I felt like that comment kind of, did that comment reveal what architects think about contractors?
James's comment about well-spoken.
Mm-hmm.
I think, yes, I think 100%. And I think that illustrates a problem. I think it goes both ways. And I think it also illustrates the need for this theme and these conversations that we've been having this week, right? We're always in Context and Clarity and Entree Architect. We're always looking for a way forward and a better way, and ways to make progress. And I think if that does, we're making assumptions, of course, but if that comment does illustrate that particular attitude, then that's one of the things that we have to change, right? This conversation was all about relationships and creating teams and all those things. And we've got to have that mutual respect.
Right. Yeah. I thought it was interesting that he said that 9 out of 10 clients come to him first and then he sets up the team. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. I know somebody had asked about that on Clubhouse this morning. And I think that's something that a lot of architects wonder about. Although maybe that's locational. It sounded to me like in some locations, people go to architects first. But I hear Mandy said it this morning. She was talking about California. We see it here in Indiana, where I am all the time. There's an awful lot of clients that go to a builder first, and you know, and Brad reflected that 90%, as you said.
This is something that I've wrestled with. I network with some good contractors now, and this goes back to the earlier point in the conversation, Jeff, that local in my area, contractors were unwilling to say, hey, Brad, let me put my arm around you and help you out as a young guy coming up in the business. There's one gentleman by the name of Rod Collum who builds out here, Collum Homes, and he's been great. He's always put our arm around me, like never looked at me as a competitor, because some people either have the mentality of abundance or the mentality of scarcity, right? And I've always been mentality of abundance that, look, for good people, there's always room, right? And if you can perform, and if you're, you know, live up to your reputation, there's going to be opportunity, and there's plenty of opportunity out there for those that, you know, are going to do it right. But the benefit of LinkedIn now and these social media channels and Instagram is that now you can build this network of builders, right? A network of community that are going to assist in that communication. And going back to the design build aspect, you know, one of the benefits, I'll say one of the huge pros of being a design build, like a true design build, I have my own architect, my own designer, and I'm doing full turnkey. Well, there's no pointing fingers, right? There's no blame assessing, like, this isn't my fault. Like, we're responsible. We're responsible for budget, for value engineering, for cost. I mean, everything's in-house. The con would be, is not in all cases, you know, depending on the talent or size of your team, but sometimes it can limit you to, you know, certain projects, depending on if it's like an ultra-modern home to maybe a transitional home to maybe a Tuscan home. You know, not every design firm can handle these very complex and very different styles. Also that referral arm. And you know, this is where my opinions change a little bit, because now I see as the builder aren't being brought in. And so if we were a design build firm, yeah, I mean, we're getting the leads now. I don't need the architect to refer me. But I've always looked at the collaboration. I see a lot of value in a lot of the consultants and architects and engineers. And the reality is everyone's so busy right now that it is important to have those arms, because I have some architects that are very good and they can do different styles, but some that specialize in ultra modern, someone that specializes, you know, in like a Santa Barbara style. And so now I can work with them, have that flexibility, their expertise, where they're doing something that's a little bit more timeless and will, you know, protect the client's investment.
I also thought, if a client goes to an architect first, he thinks the builder should be brought in before there's a floor plan. And if the client comes to him first, then he needs to have the architect on board before they start any of the process. And I thought that was, I think that was a great illustration of the level of teamwork, you know, where his mind is in terms of the level of teamwork.
Yeah, definitely. And that's exactly the way I would like to work as well. Because as he was saying that the builder is the one who knows about the differences in pricing that might have changed over the year or other details about actually the construction, that the architect asking the builder, how would you like to build this? I mean, to me, that's the best way to go, because I don't particularly care how he builds a stem wall. He used that as an example. So I might as well just make it the way he wants it, right? If it's the same to me. So yeah, I think that's really, really important. And I wish that Brad had his group of contractors, he could have them be in a group that you would just know that these people are buying into that same philosophy, so that it'd make it easier to try to match up with people. But when I belong to NARI or NARI or whatever it was, those contractors, and we get together once a month and other times for different events and things. Architects joining groups like that, you get to know them a little bit more as people and what they value and that sort of thing. And so that's another way that it's like an in-person networking thing. But I think that's another way to get to know contractors, going to their own organizations and hanging out with them. So, and then, you know, a lot of them are actually pretty well-spoken.
Right. You know, and I think that's ultimately, you know, like we talked about a minute ago, these attitudes and stereotypes are there on both sides and they go both ways. But as you pointed out, I mean, there are plenty of well-spoken contractors. And what's ultimately necessary is for us to have that mutual respect and find the right team members. I mean, that's ultimately what we're after. Without that, you know, I think the project is in peril.
Yeah, it is. It's not fun anyway. I mean, it might get finished, but it's going to be a little bit of a rough ride.
Another thing that Brad said at the beginning, and I don't remember exactly how he put it, but he was talking about the ultimate outcome for the client.
You know, over as we've worked in the industry, you do have a resource of team members, right? And, you know, a handful of architects and designers that I've had great success with. We have great relationships. We understand, you know, enough of the other person's business, as well as how they collaborate and communicate and the detail of their design drawings and specifications. And so it's pretty easy now that with social media, you know, that client experience that we're speaking about is that the client will reach out maybe to me, maybe the architect, maybe the designer. And as we get to know the client and listen to them and understand, okay, you know, style, budget, you know, time frame, you know, these things that are really important to them. It helps me align them now and say, well, I know the perfect architect, right? That's going to hit your style. I know the perfect designer that's going to hit your budget, that's sensitive to what's important to you. Let's speak with them. And then we bring them in. And then now we're starting as it should be. You know, every project should have all these components from the very beginning, because now for that year pre-construction, all that heavy lifting is done. And then we get into the build. And then that should be the pleasurable experience, right? The tagline I use is saving marriages one house at a time, right? So the only way that can happen, it's a very stressful experience, is that if the only way that can happen is if we plan correctly up front. And the only way that can happen is if we have that team together from day one.
I think that's something that we really need to keep in mind. Yes, if it goes bad, right, and we have a hard time, quote unquote, we have a hard time with the contractor, the relationship isn't good, it's a painful process. Really, ultimately, it's about the outcome for the client, right? I mean, we're going to lose some sleep, maybe some money, some whatever. But if this project goes really bad and it's not a good outcome for the client, that's not a good outcome for us. So it's, yeah, I mean, we've got to have a great team that's focused on the right outcome for the client.
Yeah. You know, the client experience, what's it like for the client? And that's another reason not to be airing any kind of dirty laundry between the contractor and the architect in front of the client. Because for both parties, if it doesn't go well, it's not going to be a good recommendation for them. So it's in everybody's best interest. And also just to make sure that you're like, my job is to hopefully improve the client's life in some way. And that includes through the construction process.
Yes. And I think we overlook that a lot.
You know, what I was saying about LinkedIn being just LinkedIn for me has been, it's another social networking sort of thing, but it's been kind of like a place where I'm afraid to speak up or I'm not really sure how to act. And it somehow just all came into focus today when he was talking about how LinkedIn, everyone there is a professional, he said. But then everybody there is also, maybe a lot of people there are on TikTok or and they act differently. And a lot of people are on Facebook. They put out their professional face on LinkedIn and never anything else. So it's kind of a safer place to be.
I think that's fair on a professional level. Yeah, definitely. And you know, he again, I met Brad a while back through Clubhouse first. We've kept in touch a lot through Instagram and also on LinkedIn as well as email. I've been on his podcast before and things like that. But so I know what he does on social media, but that's the thing that surprised me. It's like, oh my gosh, he's talking about, you know, he's taking this idea of building teams and relationships, et cetera, and he's talking about social media. But when he was talking about LinkedIn being a thought leader and all those things, and you know, he started to talk about, well, you can connect with other contractors or brokers or, you know, all of these other people. And he's so right about that. In that, again, it surprised me, but he was talking about building a brand. And in this case, the reason, for the purposes of our conversation, part of the reason for building the brand is to find the right partners, to find the right people to work with. And I think that's a big blind spot for a lot of people.
Right. I mean, I guess that's the point of all of these, is to get to know different people. Whatever, for whatever reason, either they have experiences that you haven't experienced, it kind of is an eye-opening, it can be an eye-opening experience to connect with people over social media and understand where they're coming from and just to meet people. It's true. But I still think there should be a Bumble. I think that would be good.
So we need to develop that app. We can develop it with Brad. Maybe that does make it even more interesting that let's call it a third party noticed and had that conversation. But I think the point that he was making that you're talking about is another one of those kind of surprise points. You know, he spends a lot of time, and I said this when we were talking to him, I mentioned this a couple of times this week, that what Brad is doing is not altogether different than the purpose of Entree Architect. You know, purpose of Entree Architect is to help architects build better businesses. Brad is helping contractors build better businesses. And so he's got his podcast and he's got his social media, and he started doing this summit, and he mentioned that they had had a summit in Nashville earlier this year, and they have a summit coming up in Newport Beach, I think he said, later this year in the fall. And his point behind that, as you were saying, is that it's about not only helping contractors build better businesses, but also helping people see the value.
You know, this is something I thought off about, because a lot of people are like, well, why do you share, like, you know, I talk about pool plan scheduling. I have a YouTube video, Sean, how we do our scheduling process, right? And when we signed up for the first summit in Nashville, I had 7 builders from Arizona attend in Nashville, like fly Nashville. And 7 of them are my competitors. I mean, not all of them are, but I know 2 of them specifically are my competitors. But this goes back to the conversation. Why aren't we all playing from the same starting line, right? Why is this such a secret saying, this is how you do cost plus, this is how you're transparent with the client, this is how you do your billing, this is how you do your scheduling, and you know, this is how you do your project management, and these are systems we use. Why? Like, I'm confident in who I am. I know our brain, and it's that mentality of abundance again, that I would rather have be surrounded by a ton of good builders and architects and designers that understand the industry, right? Because if my competitor knows how to schedule properly, there's a lot of overlap in the subs that we use. That means my subs aren't as constrained with him. They're more available for me. So I look at the rising tide raises all ships, right? That, hey, the more I share, not only does it educate the clients, but also my peers. And that through that, hopefully as a community and as, you know, nationally as builders, we can, you know, by doing more sustainable homes, more net zero homes, well, that's going to lower the pricing and entry point for our clients, because it's, you know, it's more of a demand. You know, the pricing structure will be more consistent. So, you know, us as builders, and I'll speak to builders specifically, that how many times are we, I don't want to say taken advantage of, but we just are essentially used by our clients, because, you know, they'll push and they'll push and they'll beg and they'll ask. And if we don't really understand why or how to run a business, we just get pushed over. And how many, it's such a low barrier to entry in construction, and so many companies fail. Why don't we help them now so that they're prepared properly when those storms come, and that they can, you know, gauge this? So I just see way more upside than I do downside.
When everybody is charging what they should be charging, when everybody is performing at a level that they should be performing at, and maybe in terms of quality, when everybody has all the systems in place and the professionalism and all that, it helps the entire industry. And to me, that was another big takeaway, is we need to double down, triple down on what we're doing here in our community. And in the AIA context, right, there has been a consent decree with the Department of Justice, AIA. In the context of AIA, you can't talk about pricing, you know, what you're charging, et cetera. But we need to help each other understand the value of our services, and whether you're, I don't know, way undercharging for your services, because it hurts everybody when you're doing that.
Of course, yeah, but I have no idea how much other people are really charging for things.
Well, I know you facilitate a mastermind group. I facilitate a mastermind group and participate in another one. And especially in one of them, I mean, we talk conceptually a lot about what people are charging. Well, just this week, someone has developed a 3-tiered proposal. Mm-hmm. And they actually showed an example that had the numbers in it, you know, one that they had just used. So you could see exactly what. But I think that's one way to do it. You know, we can have these conversations, and even at the conceptual level, because we have found, I mean, there have been people in the group where somebody might charge X percent, you know, based on construction. Somebody else might say, hey, I do everything hourly. And, you know, people start to sort of, okay, well, what does this actually mean in terms of fee, you know, as we go forward with the project? And we have had times where somebody realizes that what they're charging is vastly different than what someone else is charging for a similar scope. Mm-hmm. You know, which is, again, it's coming right back to what you were saying before, figuring out whether we're charging for our value and trying to match that up.
I just like to know, because there was this one time when I had a kind of high maintenance potential client. He was very, anyway, so he, I gave him a proposal that was maybe twice as much as I would normally charge because of his, the sensing I was getting about him being maybe difficult. And then he asked a bunch of other architects, and then he called me and he said, well, can you explain to me why you are 1/5 of the price of this other people for the same exact scope? Like, gee, no, can you tell me? I already overcharged you as far as I was concerned. So maybe they also sensed his, you know, that he was going to be a time investment.
Maybe they did.
Maybe they did.
But what's your takeaway from that, though? How do you act on that information?
The only way for me to truly act on that information would be for me to call that other architect who, he showed it to me. He showed me their proposal and just say, is this for real? I mean, is this really real? Because how am I supposed to judge if I'm charging like so much less than they are? It seems really hard to believe because people complain about how much I charge. So I don't know. Maybe it was one of those things where they didn't really want to do it. So they gave a crazy number.
Well, yeah, I could see that. I mean, that kind of thing happens certainly. But then I think we also have to ask, what's the common denominator? You know, there's this client in the mix here. And is this a client that we really want?
No, in fact, I told him I didn't want it after that. I said, you know, I just don't think this is something I'm going to be able to work on. So,
yeah. So I think that's one aspect of it. But I also think, you know, when we, I know it's hard for a lot of reasons. This is what I charge. This is my perception of what I should or shouldn't charge. You know, there's all kinds of reasons, but I think when we have credible evidence, now how do we judge that? Which is, you know, your example is a really, really good illustration of that question. But I think, you know, if I were to find out, hey, there's somebody doing exactly what I'm doing for the clients that I want, and they're charging twice as much as I am, I'm assuming that they're actually winning clients, et cetera. But I also see that a lot is we see that, we hear that, and we still don't act on it. I was listening to one of Brad's podcasts this morning, actually, as I was walking, and the person he was interviewing, who is an architect, I forget what year they said they had started, but they started, it must have been right, maybe it's like 2005 or 6 or something like that. It was right before the recession. And so, of course, there's the turmoil of the recession and then the kind of type of thing. And they changed some focus. They had some realization in terms of what could be done in their market that they didn't think could be done, level of design and quality and things. And so they came to grips with some things. And with that, they said, I've got to raise my fee, right? If I'm going to raise my quality, if I'm going to raise, you know, these things that I'm, the level of the things I'm doing, I've got to raise my fee. So they doubled their fee. They said, you know, of course, that they worked with a lot of builders as well. But of course, that got rid of some of the people they were working with. They just fell off. They weren't going to pay that. But they said, like, I forget what it was, like maybe a year later, they doubled their fee again. That, I think, is also a healthy process. You know, I'm in favor of every, now you've got to, of course, you've got to match up scope and so on and so on, but every project, raise your fee every project.
Well, I thought it was interesting that he, as a contractor, noticed that there was such a difference and felt that the person was being underpaid and should, he does value architects and he talks to his clients about valuing architects, which I think is great. Right. I mean, that's the kind of person we want to work with, obviously.
Yes. So. I think in retrospect, Brad was a great guest for this conversation because he is the kind of contractor that architects want to work with and vice versa. Would we have wanted that conversation to be any different? Would we have wanted a combative or, you know, a different?
I was just thinking about that.
Yeah.
An architect who doesn't, I mean, a contractor doesn't see the value in architects. We just mess everything up and.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that becomes a really interesting, conversation. Maybe this conversation with Brad becomes reinforcement, but I think there's so many good takeaways from what he was saying of things that we can do and should do that we can look at it and say, how do I find more contractors like Brad? Follow his advice. You know, listen to what he's saying in the conversation and realize that there are plenty of people out there, plenty of contractors out there like Brad. And you know, I think it's back to that old adage. I forget who this comes from now off the top of my head, but it's the idea of the people that you surround yourself with. You're the average of the five people you spend the most time with is one way that I've heard it say. You surround yourself with a certain level of professionalism, you're going to attract a certain level of professionalism, and you're going to have a certain level of professionalism. So I think we need to find the people that we want to work with. If it's Brad Levitt, fantastic. Or someone like Brad Levitt, fantastic. Because once you find that person and find another person, you start surrounding yourself, you start attracting those type of people. And we don't have to have that conversation about, you know, well, this one and that one, and you know, let's start working with the people we want to work with.
Right.
Let's take more responsibility and control for it.
Going to look up some people I want to follow.
Well, and again, you know, it's, I'm going to come right back to my surprise at the depth. Is that, I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but Brad is thinking about social media, not only in terms of marketing, which he's certainly doing, right? He's displaying the work, but it's very holistic. He's talking about and demonstrating. I was actually on a call earlier today where, you know, it was that old show, don't tell. He's demonstrating his thought leadership. He's demonstrating the quality of the work that they produce, AFT Construction produces. He's got his podcast. He's got his YouTube channel where he's talking about building a better contracting business, you know, all of those things. So there's that marketing aspect of it where a client may go, hey, I'm going to build a really big house or a really great commercial project. I want a really great contractor, a really professional contractor. You're going to see that come out in his content. And also if he's mentioned this as well, to attract employees. He wants employees that want to work in a really professional environment. If you're not on board with being, you know, being as organized and all of these things that you see in social, you're not coming. You're not coming to AFT. But also in architects and subcontractors and others, you know, I don't think many people, including myself, expected this to be a social media heavy conversation today. But that, to me, that's a pleasant surprise. I'm glad that we had that conversation today.
Well, what did you think? Did you hear something in there that you can use in your practice today? If you are so inspired by this conversation that you'd like to watch the entire Context and Clarity Live episode, head on over to the Entre Architect YouTube channel. There's a playlist there that has all of the full Context and Clarity Live episodes. And if you want more of the Context and Clarity podcast delivered to you every week, give us a thumbs up and subscribe wherever you consume podcasts. If you like content like this, check out Gable Media. It's a multimedia network for people that care about the built environment, and it's the home of Context and Clarity. With Gable's growing family of podcasts and video channels, I know you'll find something there that interests you. You can learn more at gablemedia.com. That's gablemedia.com. And one last thing before you go. If the topic of today's episode is of particular interest to you, join me over on Facebook today at 4 p.m. Eastern inside the Entre Architect Community Facebook group. That's where every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern, I host Context and Clarity Conversations, and we take topics like this and we dig deeper. We have a conversation in real time to try to find more clarity around the things that matter most to you. So thanks for listening. I hope our time together has inspired you to think about your community and your practice and how you can support those around you. We'll be back here again next week. And in the meantime, I hope you'll join me and the Entre Architect community on Facebook today at 4 p.m. Eastern so that we can help each other find more clarity around the topics that matter most, no matter what your context is.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.